Woodworkers for the Blind presents Dale Alton, a.k.a. Denver Dale, a woodworker who started out through necessity. He surely wasn't going to pay someone to do the work that he thought he could do. And now he does woodworking, and he does it well. And you can find Woodworkers for the Blind on the web at www.4b.org. A lot of blind and visually impaired woodworkers sharing ideas, thoughts, projects, and a lot of how-to-dos. Now our host, Daryl Vickers, will take it away.
7:04 p.m. All right, well, I think we're around 7 o'clock, because that's what my watch is telling me, so I guess I will get started. You want to start the recording, Mr. Jeff?
I'm way ahead of you, Daryl.
I was going to say, I think he already did.
Of course you are. That's not take much, buddy boy.
Four minutes and 20 seconds ago. Oh, I thought you were going to get started.
I am. Is the recording started? Yeah. I didn't hear it start.
He said he started it 10 minutes ago.
You know, that's fine. All right, welcome everybody. May's conference call. Dale also is going to be our guest if I don't kick him off here before we even get started.
Too late.
A couple things I want to cover real quick just before we do start with Dale, and that is, first of all, since we've started these podcasts, our membership has been growing. We have like 8 members, new members. We got one just today from Arizona, so I'm happy about that. And the whole reason for Woodwork for the Blind isn't numbers or anything like that, but just to reach as many people who want to do or have some interest in woodworking, you know, who happen to be visually impaired. It's been helping. Second thing I wanted to also talk about just for a minute is a small box contest. I've been getting a couple people have told me they're going to do one. I have changed one thing, and that is who's going to judge it. I was going to do the 1850 working farm down in Tennessee, but I sort of changed my mind on that because, A, I haven't talked to them lately, but mostly because I don't know how well they would judge or be able to describe things in a way that we can understand the projects. So what I'm wanting to do is have everyone send their boxes to me, and I belong to our senior center here in Washington, and I'm going to take them down there and put numbers on them so nobody knows who's what is what, and let the membership over a course of a week pick who they think the winners are. And there's 2 classes. It's going to be beginner and advanced. I am going to participate in the advanced, but I'm not actually going to enter my box. So nobody has to worry about me rigging the election like, you know, the rest of the country does. I hope many of you will participate in it. Larry did this, like I said, back in, I think it was 2010. And it's a good spot to start, especially if you want to start woodworking, because everything starts out basically with a box when you first get started. I'm also extending the date, the finish date, because it works out better for them. It's going to be like mid-September to have your boxes in. And if you do want them back, just include the return shipping and I'll make sure you get them back. Anybody have any questions about that or the membership or anything?
Sounds good.
Okay. So we're going to welcome Mr. Dale Alton. Denver Dale, as some of us call him, who've known him for a long time, as Dale is out in Denver, Colorado. Dale and I first met in person at Larry's first workshop he did up in Chicago. So that goes back for a while.
Yeah, it does.
How are you doing, Mr. Dale?
I'm doing great. I was thinking, Denver Dale, did that come to be when we were up at Larry's place?
Yes, because it was either Denver Dale or Good Looking Dale. That wouldn't be you. That would have been Dale Levins from Canada.
Yeah.
He named himself Good Looking, even though some of us didn't necessarily agree. It just got to be to separate people. You just became Denver Dale and he became Good Looking Dale. That's how all that got started. I would change your name to something else, but probably a family show. So like I said, Dale and I have known each other for quite a while. We talk a lot and we have a lot of fun. So he's used to me giving him a bunch of crap and vice versa. So not to worry if we sound like we don't like each other. Actually, I think we do.
Yeah, most definitely.
But like I said, we've known each other a while. And Dale actually hosted 3 workshops, Dale, at your place?
2.
Okay. You know, anything in the past, I don't remember too well, especially what happened 2 minutes ago. I was there for 1. I couldn't make the second one, but that was one of the few that I actually had to miss. But it was a good workshop. Dale has a nice shop out there who's expanding and working on it. I don't think you had a shop at all at the first workshop we did you?
No, I didn't. I was just working out of my little 1-car garage.
Oh, that's right.
Every time I turned on my jointer, the lights in the house would dim.
Oh, like mine is now.
Yeah. I had just a little POS table saw. You know, I was just getting into it. And it was actually a friend of mine brought over a little Delta Sidekick chop saw. And that was the first tool I got. Then it's like, well, you know, if I'm going to do this, let's go get a table saw. So hit up, you know, the girlfriend at the time and said, hey, let's run over to Sears and find me a table saw. So I found myself a little contractor saw and bought that, used that for years until I upgraded to my Unisaw.
And I think that's how a lot of us got started. I know that's how I did. So, Mr. Dale, I know a little of your background, but for those who don't, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself personally?
Holy cats. I was born a number of years ago. Grew up in Minnesota, most of it in central Minnesota. Moved out to Colorado in 95. Been living here since. Moving out to Missouri the end of the year. I don't know if you knew that or not, Daryl, did you?
I did. I just haven't decided if we're going to let you in or not.
Okay. I always wanted to get into woodworking, even as a teenager, but I was one of those big dumb boys who didn't think it was cool, so I didn't pursue it as a kid. And so it took me losing my sight and everything else and becoming a house owner before I started to get into woodworking.
Well, that's pretty cool. I don't think I know this, but how did you lose your sight, Dale?
RP.
Okay, so you and I are the same. I guess maybe I did know that. There again, another thing I can't remember. So you've lived in Denver area since 95?
The furthest I got away from the house, my parents' place, was maybe 5 miles. So I lived within a 5 mile radius of where I first came in.
Which is in Colorado, correct?
Yes.
So what do you do now, sir?
Oh, I'm a telephone systems analyst for the IRS.
Those people.
Yes. Now, here's something kind of fun, though. If you write the IRS in, you know, into one word, do you see what it spells?
No.
Theirs.
Huh?
Theirs. T-H-E-I-R-S. And it's even possessive.
All righty, then.
I think it's pretty funny, actually.
You are such a mess. Oh.
It's kind of funny. When you mentioned IRS, four people left.
Nice.
Yeah, just ran everybody right out the door there, buddy. So you have built some projects. I've seen a few of them. What, do you got anything in the works right now? I know you built a couple of tables, maybe three of them, maybe.
I've built several tables, some Adirondack chairs, doors, which I'm in the process of trying to... I had some pantry doors that were just crudely slapped together, I guess would be about the best way of putting it. And I redid the trim in the house. And so I used the trim for the baseboards as the stiles and rails for the doors. And then I, you know, put it on some wood that my then wife and son said, yes, that looks good. It was hemlock on pine. Oh, yeah, that looks great, Dale. You can't even tell. Well, then the doors were starting to fall apart after a number of years. Buddy and I were talking. It's like, yeah, Dale, those doors don't even match. The one side isn't even finished. You know, we should just make some more. So in the process of making new doors, and they've just been a huge headache time after time. On my third iteration of the making the doors. So, yeah, it's just frustrating.
Well, I think we all have those projects. The doors are not necessarily, especially full-size doors, aren't the easiest things in the world to make.
No, they aren't full-size doors. One's like 48 inches and the other one's like 47 inches in height.
Oh, yeah. I have problems with anything over about 28 inches. You know, if I have to have an extra style or rail in there.
Okay.
In my kitchen, I have like a 52-inch little door. Basically, I call it a place to put the mop, but it really just fills in space next to my refrigerator to hide it. And getting that door flat and straight was, it took a while. It took several tries before I finally got it. But that's woodworking, and a lot of it is just trial and error.
Yeah. I got a new toy I've only played with so far. No batteries required. I think will help keep it flat and everything when it comes time for glue up and everything. It's one of those tools called the domino.
Oh, yeah. Domino jointer. You got one of those?
Yeah, I did.
And so explain to everybody what that is, Dale.
You would. It's like a biscuit jointer. You know, instead of making an oval area for the biscuit to go into, it's square. You know, so then you get a domino, and it looks like a small domino that you play dominoes with. It doesn't have numbers on it, just has like little pieces for the, you know, for the glue to go sliding through. And it just, you know, slides in, you know, and then the domino makes the slots that the two ends go into. You just fill it up with glue, slide it together, and theoretically everything should be nice and flat.
They are good. Like those kind of joints and things are good for holding your boards together on plane, so you don't have highs and lows in them when you're putting and doing your glue ups together. That's what I like about that kind of joinery. I don't use it that much, but they do come in handy when you're trying to keep things flat.
I ended up getting a flat clamp. I think that's what it's called. I don't know. But what it is it's a 2x4 that you drill 1/2-inch holes down the middle, then you cut it in half. And then the wood clamps down on top and below the wood. And then on, you know, then there's clamps on the sides that squeeze it together to help, you know, to keep it flat, and then to squeeze it together for the glue up.
We call those in woodworking, we call those cauls, Dale.
No, it's not a cawl. Because isn't the cauls just flat with a piece of tape on it?
Well, it can be. I'm just giving you crap again. You are so easy. So easy to pick on. And you remember our first trip when we went out to Napa?
The one that you and I went together?
Yeah, the first workshop George had out in Napa. I met you. We met and hooked up in Denver and took the, because I had a stop over there, layover there. And then we went on out to California. Anyway, what's so funny about that is that Dale is a big guy, for anybody who doesn't know Dale. I mean, he's a big guy. I can look up to Dale. But Dale comes out to California because it's August. And, you know, California has this great weather and everything. And he apparently didn't read Mark Twain at all and didn't know about San Francisco. And we came out of the airport. Denver Dale is wearing a Muscle Man t-shirt and a pair of shorts. And he's got this little knapsack on his back that I think he only had underwear in. And we had to wait. We got there just as the last bus to Napa, well, that particular bus left. So we had another hour and a half wait.
I thought it was like three. It was something ridiculous.
It probably seemed that way to you. You look like a giant popsicle.
I froze my ass off.
San Francisco in the summertime is one cold place when that wind's blowing.
Oh, yes, it was.
But, you know, the smart people are sitting around in jacket. I tried to give him my jacket, but he's too big to even fit into it. That was a fun trip.
It was a fun trip.
That was the first workshop we did out in Napa at Enchanted Hills in California, which is a very nice place. I think George Wurzel was working. You're on the call somewhere, but he was there for a while, and that's sort of how we ended up going to Enchanted Hills. Was Larry had hooked up with George at some point. None of us, I didn't know George at that time. And a nice place to go visit, you know.
It was a nice place.
With good California weather, if you were out of San Francisco.
Yeah.
That guy had the air conditioner on the bus running full blast. Which didn't help Dale out at all.
Carol, God bless her soul. You know, first day, full day we were up there, ran over to like a Walmart or something and picked me up a hoodie.
Yeah, she got so Carol was
total godsend.
So you're getting, going to change gears. So you're getting ready to retire, I think, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm actually turning in my paperwork on November 22nd. And then I'm going to make my last day of work July 31st.
Of next year?
Mm-hmm. I have to wait 9 months after I turn in my paperwork before I can retire. So,
and that's the point where you're planning on moving out to Western Missouri, right?
No.
Oh, you're moving out sooner?
Yeah. I'll be out there at the end of the year. I'm planning December.
Okay. Yeah. You can work from home on your computer, can't you?
Yeah. The house is going on the market October 1st. I'm guessing the way the market has been here in Denver that I should be closing by October 31st. It's been nuts.
Hey, Dale, you mentioned the table saw and chop saw that you started out with. What led you to start growing your tool base, and what were those tools?
I had those for a number of years. Just did small little things with them, made shelves and, you know, things like that. And then eventually went out and bought a jointer, little 6-inch jointer. And then also a buddy of mine let me borrow a planer, but it didn't have any tables on it or anything. And I was extremely nervous about getting my hands that close when I'm feeding in a piece of wood and stuff. So I gave him back the planer and went out and bought a DeWalt 735. Yeah, those are the things that I had up here in the garage. And then once I had my workshop built, you know, everything got moved out there.
I've always been interested in getting a planer. How do you like the DeWalt 735?
I love it. Absolutely love it.
You know, I just made myself a present of that planer last weekend before last.
You got the 735?
Yeah, I've been looking at them for a while. And then my Rigid finally, I have thousands of board feet to that Rigid, so I can't complain about it. But it finally gave up the dust. But, you know, I went and it naturally had to give up the dust right when I was working. So I had to go down to Lowe's and they had the 735. And the funny thing about it was when I hooked it up, it threw sawdust everywhere. When I read about it, it's supposed to be, oh, it's got this fan and it keeps your wood clean and all that. Well, it wasn't doing that. About half of the stuff went in my dust collector. Half of it went out into the shop. And I called DeWalt. And of course, when I finally got somebody who could help me, they hung up on me. I called Bob out in North Carolina, Bob Kennedy, in it because I knew he had one, and said, what is the deal with with this planer? And he wasn't having any trouble with it. I couldn't find anybody complaining about it on the web. So I said, well, I took the thing apart one more time and put it back because you have to take the cover off to get to the blades. And when I reseated everything the second time, now it just all the sawdust goes right where it's supposed to. And I honestly do not know what the difference was, other than I guess it just wasn't sealing, because it does have a nice extraction fan in it to pull all that wood chips out of it. I love it now. It does a beautiful job.
I found a shop vac doesn't work very well as a dust collector for that type of thing.
I tell you what, you're planing two boards, your shop vac would be full anyway. There's a lot of wood chips and planing lumber. You know, I think you built your shop was pretty new. I think we've had our first workshop out there, wasn't it? If I remember right.
Yes, it was, because we built a couple of the tables out there.
Yeah, that's right. And you had just got your a Unisaw.
Yeah, there's a beast for you. Three-phase, five horse.
Oh, but yeah, it'll work it beautifully.
Let's define a Unisaw.
It's a fancy cabinet saw.
But it's made by Delta. It was like their industrial saw back in the day. And in fact, I think they made them until early 70s, I think, when Delta went off into different directions. But it's a super heavy-duty cabinet saw. I think, I don't know how much it weighs, but it's got a lot of cast iron, not just in the top. You'd find them in almost, I think, just about any. I know my school had them, you know, and our woodworking shop had Unisaws. So I think you'd find them in most woodworking shops back in the day. And they're still great if you can find them.
That's what George had up in Enchanted Hills.
But it's very heavy, heavy duty.
Okay.
And matter of fact, I think Dale's was, I think yours is 220. We had to get a converter on it.
It's three phase. So I had to put a converter on it. And with that three phase, gets it up to five horse. Yeah, that thing cuts through about anything. It's awesome. Although it loves to burn maple.
Well, everything likes to burn maple and cherry on it if you're not careful with them. So you're going to have a new shop when you move?
I don't know what's going on there. That's one of the things I put on my wish list, yeah, you know, was to have like a workshop. But, you know, everybody's got their own ideas of what a workshop is. I'm not looking for something that's 10 by 10. Ideally, at least 30 by 30 is what I'm hoping for.
Aren't you buying the house?
Yeah, you know, but, you know, the realtor, you know, she sees, oh, this has got a workshop on it. And, you know, if it's like a little garden shed, like what I have, you know, on my property, you know, it's like 8 by 10. Yeah, no, I'm hoping for something 30 by 30. If not, I'll have enough extra money from the sale of my house. And, you know, what I'm purchasing out there, that I could probably have something built.
Well, young man, since you are kind of the pup in our group here, how old are you now?
Double nickel.
All right. I knew you were still back there in the 50, in your 55 range. Just a kid.
That I is. Just a kid with a mouth.
Anything else you want to tell us about yourself there, buddy? Good. We didn't want to know it anyway.
Good, because I'm not good about talking about myself.
I know.
Could have given other people shit. That's about it.
Dale and I, we kind of have the same sarcastic, smart-ass sense of humor. That's why we get along. Only two will put up with each other.
And they're both on here the whole show, folks.
Oh, the fun's just beginning, Jeff.
Dale, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Were you into woodworking before you lost your eyesight, or did you start woodworking afterwards?
After.
Okay.
Ooh, a one-word answer. God forbid.
You know, like I said, okay, so a little more about me, I guess, is I was sighted as a teenager and in my early 20s. I was in my mid-20s when I lost my sight because of RP. And as a kid, I saw well enough to drive illegally. And my parents encouraged it. You know, they're like, you know, hey, you know, you pay attention to what's going on around you, go out and ride your motorcycle and whatnot. Well, I never had a car, but motorcycles. Go ahead and go out, ride your motorcycles, snowmobiles, ATVs. And then I was heading out to the resort one time. I got pulled over on my motorcycle for not having a headlight. Well, cop didn't arrest me, but he did impound my motorcycle. And I noticed, you know, at that time that my vision was getting to the point where I just wasn't being as observant as I had been the past fall. And so that was what made me give up the motorcycle. I, you know, continued with the snowmobile and the ATV for a couple of years after that, which I, hindsight being what it is, I probably shouldn't have. But I'm still here to talk about it. So couldn't have been too bad. I didn't hear any screeching brakes or anything. So
when you say you... When you say you could see, though, it's all relative, right?
What do you mean?
Did you ever have, like, 20/20
no,
vision?
No. Good God, no.
Right.
My acuity was, like, 20/30, what I saw in front of me, but my peripheral was, like, 10-15%.
Right. So, back to the woodworking thing, you were...
So, I bought the house in 05. Good God, I was 36 when I started to get into this. Yeah, 36, 37 when I started getting into woodworking. And I was like, okay, you know, I didn't want to pay somebody to come over and do the different things that I wanted to get done. So it's like, well, I've always wanted to get into woodworking. Why not start now? So thus I did. I remember the first time I made a shelf, told my girlfriend, yep, I got to sand the shelf. You know, you just keep sanding with the same grit, but you just keep going later and later, not knowing the different, you know, that you have to sand down through the grits to get rid of the swirls and everything. But yeah, it just cracked me up. Oh, I'll just start sanding later and later.
Well, the sandpaper does eventually wear out, you know.
Well, yeah, true. But yeah, you know, so I got that 80 grit. I just kept sanding a little bit, not pressing as hard on it.
Well, we don't know what we don't know. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's a lot of what, you know, Larry, with the recordings and everything, a lot of what he did was give us access to information. If you weren't learning this stuff as a child and never had access, experience with it, you wouldn't know those different things. You know, you really wouldn't know a lot of things. And so that's why the information side of things is so important. That's basically when I got back into woodworking, is because I found Larry's site. I forgot what I was looking for at the time when I accidentally found it, but I started getting the magazines, and it just kind of, the bug just kind of bit me after I was listening to how people were doing things in woodworking and knowing that other blind people were doing it, you know.
Yeah.
I always did the house stuff, but I, you know, repairs around the house, but not actual real woodwork.
True.
Dale, when you mentioned sanding in the process, I think it was sanding that when I started learning, you know, 80 grit, 100, 120, 200, 400, that type of stuff, that's what got me into fine woodworking, because then I realized I could take something and get the grain lines out, get the grit lines out, I guess, what you would say, and get it down to a fine thing. And then even with a palm sander, shaping things, like rolling it over the curve a little bit, you know, and just... It was sandpaper that really got me into the detail. And then I wanted to make stuff. And when I got to the sandpaper part, that was most interesting. And just the other day, I had a piece of sandpaper on my palm sander and I touched it and I said, ah, forget that. Ripped it off right away and quickly made some 80, 120, 200, you know, because how many times do you sit there with an old piece of sandpaper and say, I can get this, you know, just start out at 80 and go up.
And it does work a lot easier that way, don't it?
Like you said, it's learning.
I have found that sanding is so much easier with power than by hand anymore. You know, if I got power, it doesn't bother me to sand. But if I have to sit there and like hand sand a tabletop, I'll pass.
Well, that little fine sanding it, you know, getting it down to the last part, I find that kind of therapeutic sometimes, you know, it doesn't take a lot of thought or whatever. It just takes, you know, emotion.
Yeah. When I was teaching, that was when three or four of us, if we were all in the students sitting around and sanding, that reminded me of sitting on a porch with the old hound dog sitting there like on you're just talking, you're all sanding and throwing your sandpaper in the middle of the table and stuff like that. It's good therapy. You're right, Daryl.
But it's still not one of probably my favorite things, but it's, you know.
I find my hand gets numb. If I'm doing it by hand, my hand gets numb.
Well, it's because it's keeping up with your brain.
You think it's going even that fast?
Oh, God. I love to pick on Dale.
So what kind of tables were you building, Dale?
I've built coffee tables, end tables, my dining room table, my patio table, table in between my Adirondack chairs.
Let's back up to a table for a second. When we were in Chicago, the workshop was actually at Larry's house, and Larry had made this really nice trestle table he had on his patio that we all sat around and ate. And that, I think that is one of the first projects you did when you got back home, was to build a trestle table?
Yeah. It's not actually a trestle table, but it's very closely resembles Larry's table. I just really liked the table, and yeah, it was awesome. It was made out of white oak. I didn't build mine as big as Larry's. Larry's was a monster.
Oh yeah, you get a lot of people around Larry's.
It was what, 8x4?
It was pretty long, yeah.
And I think it was at least 8 foot.
And I remember you being taken with that table when we were there.
Oh, I was. I was totally taken with it. Yeah, that was... So when Kim and I got married, I wanted to, you know, I busted ass to, you know, get that done. I remember her and I sitting there doing the glue up out in the... You know, this was long before the... I actually went to Rockler for a class. And, you know, she's like, well, what do you want to build? I go, I want to build this table. And so I told her about it. And Yeah, you know, learned about making dados and mortise, you know, well, mortise and tenon, you know, basically. Well, had to do all that too. And then, you know, using a drill bit and chisel, and, you know, to make the mortises for the legs. And then I just used dado blades to make the mortise and tenons for the top. So I learned how to do that and everything. And then, I, you know, my instructor was nice enough to throw everything in her SUV and brought me home. And then Kim, my last wife, we spent an afternoon, I think it was, out there just gluing it up, getting everything nice and square. And voila, you know, then just, you know, I had a couple of sawhorses that I just had it sitting on, you know, while it glued up and everything. And then did that. And then I just assembled it, you know, and then we had it ready for the wedding. But then several years after that, it literally just fell apart. You know, the top just fell apart during a party. And I was like, oh, son of a cuss. So I had to remake it and everything. But I've been a little more diligent about trying to keep a finish on it, you know, like Thompson's or just something like that to, you know, so it wouldn't, you know, rot and stuff quite as quickly.
But see, that was an outdoor table, you know, a nice picnic table is what it really comes down to. And but there's a lot of techniques that you learned and used when you were building that table that you use in all of your woodworking, or can use in any woodworking project if you want to, you know.
Yes.
So it doesn't always have to be, you know, we don't have to start out with just a fine piece of furniture to begin with. The same techniques are used in a lot of places, a lot of different things.
I've always given outdoor furniture 7 years, and then I start looking at it twice again and think about refinishing or redoing or starting over with it.
That's about right, yeah.
I'm looking at, yeah, I'm probably going on about 7 years on this iteration of the top. And I thought about saying the hell with it and making my next one out of cedar, you know, instead of using a hardwood.
Same thing, the cedar, after 7 years, it starts getting a little softness to the top of it or wherever touching the contact with the concrete or something.
Yeah, a little rough. Everything needs maintenance.
So it's kind of soft like Daryl's head.
What'd you say?
I said it's kind of soft like Daryl's head.
Yeah.
But it's fun.
Oh, it is.
Well, Dale, I appreciate you being on the call. Does anybody else have some questions for Mr. Dale?
Hey, this is Jim. This is Jim King.
Big Jim. Yes, sir. Jim, what's up?
I have a couple of things. First of all, just a shout out for Shannon's Lumber Industry Update podcast. Do you guys listen to that?
Yeah,
I do not.
I subscribe to that.
Well, you might want to look it up. It's not really about woodworking as much as it is about wood and what's going on in the wood industry. And he really gets into the molecular structure of wood and why certain woods act the way they do. And I have found it to be very helpful in working with different kinds of wood, you know, understanding a little better how things are going to work with different kinds of tooling and expansion and contraction and all those sort of things. And he's very, very knowledgeable, and I wanted to give a shout out for that podcast, Shannon's Lumber Industry Update.
That's a good one.
Then I wanted to ask a question. Has anybody ever made any or used any of the designs from, there's a company out of Colorado, MK Design, and there's a fella, James King, fine woodworking, completely unrelated to me. He has put some designs up for Adirondack furniture that is somewhat unique, and he also has some podcasts out there, and I've been thinking that maybe I might want to make a few of those for people around, and I just wondered if anybody had any experience with his designs.
Negatory for me.
Me neither.
I've watched his podcast. It's called King's Fine Woodworking on YouTube.
Yeah.
And yeah. I actually made the workbench that he made. He's got some pretty cool stuff.
Okay. Yeah, that's the guy. And he's done some Adirondack chairs where he cuts, there's some curves in the slats in the back, so it creates a lumbar support. And I thought, well, that might be kind of fun to make those. I just recently got one of these called a Steady Curve from Woodpeckers. It's a template guide. You can make the same thing, but this is a pretty nice thing. It's a template guide for the bandsaw. So it makes cutting those kind of curves just so much easier with a template guide like that. And I don't worry about my fingers either so much. Those are a couple of projects that I've been looking at, and I just wondered if anybody had any experience with them.
Thanks for calling, Jim.
Well, When I get started, it's going to be a while. I still have to complete some more cabinetry in my shop. And once I get that going, and then I'm setting up a leather working station in the shop also with a sewing machine and all that. Once I get all that done, then I'm going to make some of these Adirondack chairs. So it'll be a while, but I'll let you know how it turns out.
All right. Very good.
Hey, Jim, are you the Jim from Hawaii?
Jim King. I'm in Maine.
Oh, Maine. Okay.
Yeah, I'm not the same guy. James King, Fine Working. We share the same name, and I have a saw stop table saw, and I had to call tech support one time about some kind of a code or something that showed up on the saw. So the lady at saw stop was looking me up, and she said, "Are you James King?" Blah blah blah. And I said, "No, but I know who you're talking about. He's got a podcast. That's not me." And kind of a coincidence to get mixed up with somebody who's really accomplished. Oh well.
He actually did a YouTube video on making money in woodworking, and he said in the video that he sells those Adirondack chairs for like $400 a piece, and he's literally sold thousands of them. He said it's the biggest money maker he's ever done in his business.
That's what, that video is a few years old, and when I talked to the people in Denver that actually handle selling the templates and plans for those chairs, they said that they're selling them for $600 now. But you know, by the time you buy the wood and all your screws and parts and finish and all that stuff, you're going to have $200 or $300 just in materials, maybe more.
Wood's going to cost you more than that.
For a while, I was making picnic tables and selling them, and I had some unique features about the tables. They were just a standard picnic table shape with, you know, about 8 feet long with a bench on each side and so forth. But I made a stand or a platform that hung down from the center and a hole, and I fixed it up so that you could put an umbrella in the center of the table in a conventional picnic table, which you rarely see. I've cut a hole in the top of one, and I was showing it to somebody that had an umbrella in it. And the other thing that I've done is I put wheels on one end and a handle on the other end. You can just wheel it around if you, you know, if you got it on the lawn or something. The picnic table weighs 300 pounds or 275 or something like that. I don't remember. You know, a lot of people ruin their picnic table by dragging it around when they want to mow the lawn. So I just got some 10 or 11 inch wheels and fixed them up on one end, put a handle on the other end, and put an umbrella stand in the center. And, you know, with just those few additional features, I was selling those for over $500. But the darn things, they got so big and heavy, I didn't have enough room in my shop, and so I had to build them outside. And then I was selling them through the local lumber yard, and they would bring a flatbed over and winch them up onto the top of the flatbed. And then you could move it around on one. In fact, we put a video up on Facebook with a neighbor down the street, a lady, a 70-year-old lady, wheeling one across her parking lot. So anyway, that was fun. I had the wheels on the end of them, and somebody was going to pick it up and drag it around with the umbrella, but the umbrella was sitting on the ground, and it almost ruined the umbrella pull. And so that's when I figured I'd better make a design so that the umbrella can move with the table.
I made a picnic table with dock part and all like for a lake. It was fun, and the posts were sunk into the ground, so there's no way I could move that.
Yeah, it's not going to go anywhere, is it? I enjoy making outdoor furniture, but it's in many ways, it's more like carpentry than woodworking.
Mm-hmm. Also, one last thing. I'm kind of excited about a guest for next month. But if anybody has a guest they can think of or know that we could do on these podcasts, I'd appreciate it. Or a topic that you wanted to cover. So thanks, everybody, for being here.
Be sure to check out www4b.org, Woodworkers for the Blind. Become part of the community and learn from others. Hope you enjoy it. And until next time, bye-bye.